This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Mr. W.T. Layton. I think most people call him Bill Layton. Mr. Layton, I've saved an article from the Decatur Sunday Herald and Review that was published on June 24, 1979, hoping I could talk to you, and now we finally arranged this meeting. At that time, you were retiring after 34 years on the Wabash and Norfolk and Western Railroads. What have you been doing since then?
Playing golf and traveling.
It sounds as if you've been enjoying yourself.
I certainly have.
Well, you must have thought something about those 34 years on the railroad since you retired. Let's go back to the beginning. Was it inevitable that you would take a job with the railroad?
Well, not really. Yeah. Not really.
Now, let's just bring Mrs. Layton in here, too, because I think she might have something to say. It seems as if this is a team, family affair.
Not really. His father did want him to join, to belong to the railroad, but he wasn't interested in. That was the last thing in the world I wanted him to do. But I want to say now that I'm thoroughly happy and glad he did finally take the job on the railroad, because it's been a very good living for us.
Why didn't you want to join, to be a railroader, since your father was?
Well, my dad used to come home wore out after 16 hours of work, and I just had a job down at Myers Brothers, and I was making real good money, about $25 a week.
Of course, those dollars meant a little more then.
Yeah, well.
But even then, it wasn't tremendous, was it?
Oh, no, it was very cheap. And then I went to the Army, where my younger brother hired out before he went to the Army.
Oh.
And I hired out after. Mm-hmm. I come back out of the Army. Mm-hmm. Which I went out to Alice Chalmers and hired out, and I think my pay was something like $40 a week, and my brother's was, well, I don't know.
Quite a bit,
about three or four times more. So I decided I better go railroad.
So it was really the financial rewards
right.
that convinced you.
Right.
What jobs did you have during those years?
Well, I hired out, first I hired out firing, and then they were going to send me to Quincy, but I was going to get married, so I hired out breaking.
So you could stay in Decatur.
So I could stay in Decatur at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I made that terrible mistake there. I mean, hiring out break.
Well, we better get that straight, Mr.
Yeah. But then, anyway, and then I went breaking, and then I was furloughed, and then I worked on the section. I flagged crossings.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of these jobs. What about, is firing a hard job?
I don't know. I never did do it. Oh, a couple times.
Yeah.
A couple times I fired from Springfield to Decatur once, and I fired from Springfield to Hannibal, and then three or four times I fired switch engine over there, all hand-fired.
Yeah. Now, this is in the days of steam railroading.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, it's different.
Oh, yes, way different now.
Well, we'll talk about that later. But what about braking? Is that a hard job?
Braking was a hard job, and my favorite job was the local. And we worked 16 hours a day, and this during steam engine days and diesel.
Well, when you work 16 hours a day, every day?
6 days a week.
Six days
a week.
People wouldn't believe it, would they?
No. No.
Did you belong to a union?
Oh, yes. Oh,
but
sure.
The union hadn't yet arranged or worked for lower
No,
hours.
You see, it's just been in the last 10 years that they got down to 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
They went from 16 to 14, and we thought that was really something. Now,
mm-hmm.
Then they went to 12 hours, which is 12 hours now.
Mm-hmm.
So they really thought that was a big deal for us.
I suppose on a train, you can hardly stop at a certain, you have to wait till you get to the end of the line.
to rest,
to,
you mean?
To stop.
Yeah,
I mean, you can't just say automatically you're working a certain number of hours and that's it.
No, only 12 hours. Now 12 hours we stop, and they usually bring a bear crew. They call bear crew, they bring another crew out. Or they tie us up overnight somewhere,
mm-hmm.
like Jacksonville in a hotel
mm-hmm.
or somewhere like that, mm-hmm. Hannibal.
Well, now, in braking, your job was to
switch cars.
Uh-huh.
You know, like we used to have a, I think it was 39 different spots here in Jacksonville alone.
Mm.
That, you know, everything went by freight in them days, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And then the trucks naturally come in later. But most everything went by train.
So you had to have connections to many different places.
Right, and we had an old spots and, mm-hmm. you know, line up your train ride. There was a whole lot of riding and a whole lot of switching, and mm-hmm. it was a lot of fun.
But you had to get exactly in the right place.
Oh, yeah. Or somebody said, yeah, sure.
Right. Uh-huh. Well, after what are some of the other jobs you did during that time?
Well, I was on the section when I was furloughed.
What does that mean?
That means...
You're talking to someone who is very ignorant.
All right, they call them Gandy dancers, and it's a guy's work on the track.
Oh.
And it's maintenance away, and it's a very hard job.
They're very important.
Very important. It's a very hard job, and of course, they're down on the totem pole, you know, see.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, that means that they don't get very much money.
Oh,
for the work
see.
They put
yes.
out. Any man that works hard gets less money than anybody who sits, you know, or...
Physical labor
gets less money than that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you worked on the section.
Right. And then at Springfield, we used to have crossing watchmen, and I even did that while mm-hmm. I was furloughed off of the train service, mm-hmm. you see. And then when you didn't
work continuously. You were given jobs at certain times, and then you had a chance to do other jobs?
When I hired out, different.
Oh, I see.
Like, I was furloughed from Decatur.
Oh.
We worked
that means they didn't
Decatur.
Need you for a while.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I'd go over in Springfield, and I hired out either switching or section.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now, then they laid off the switchman over there, so I had to stay strictly on the section.
Mm-hmm.
And then they laid me off on the section, so I had to take a job flagging the crossing.
Mm-hmm.
But usually I had a job or... If it got cut off of everything, why, then we painted or worked at a filling station or anything to make a living.
Now, when you were a flagman, they wouldn't have men doing that now, would they?
No, they haven't.
They
got all crossing gates
and gates.
Lights, mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. Well, where were you? What were you doing then toward the end of your career?
I was a conductor.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that. I think most people who have ever been on a train or...
Well,
wonder about some of the problems of the conductor.
The conductor job, he runs the train, and of course.
You mean he tells the engineer what
right,
to do?
Right, that's right. Tells everybody on the railroad on his train. That's his train.
Mm-hmm.
From one destination to another. Now I don't know what it is now. Things has changed, so I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But we used to run a train from Decatur to Mobley, Missouri, which is 211 miles. And then we handled all the bills and all the, you know, writing up the bills and all mm-hmm. that stuff.
And reports that you had
right,
to make.
Right, and then we had to, you know, set out cars, pick up mm-hmm. cars at destination and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to make all the safety rules. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's all there is to it.
And you had to
dealing with the public is the worst. I mean, you know, like crossings, blocking crossings, and you have
not
trouble.
The public on the train.
No. the train would break down, the air hose would break or something like that. We'd have to fix it, and then the people would be raising heck for blocking the crossing, which we can't do anything about. I mean, you know, the train's an emergency. You can't move it.
No.
There's no way of moving it until you find the trouble, you know. And guys used to get mad and go to whip us and throw us in jail and
honk their horns.
Yeah. And, you know, it makes you mad because you're trying to find it and they're raising heck with you all the time. But, you know,
and now,
it's still a lot of fun.
What about the passengers?
Well,
see, Mrs. Layton evidently has a comment here.
I used to brake on a passenger train and really enjoyed it. That was the best job I ever had, really, because we worked a day, one day on, one day off.
Uh-huh.
You see, and that was really a lot of fun. So
that was just a short term.
It didn't last very long. Especially when the NW got a hold of the railroad.
Well, maybe you could tell us about that. There was a switch. When you first started, it was all Wabash.
All Wabash, huh? And then the NW took over, which they improved the track tremendously and done more, way more business.
Mm-hmm.
Only we had diesel and got bigger trains.
Mm-hmm.
So that took care of the crews in that way, in respect, you see.
Well, when did passenger service end? It started again fairly recently, but do you remember, or what?
I can't remember the day.
I don't remember.
That's been, 15 years ago?
I'd say it.
15 years ago, I guess. 15 years ago,
uh-huh.
Madden. I don't know exactly. I
well,
can't look it up.
When the NW came in, did they have passenger service?
No.
passenger service had ended before then.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we still have, you know, some jobs up to Chicago, and I imagine they still got that mm-hmm. one train up there, I imagine. Mm-hmm.
That wasn't your route.
That wasn't my turn. But mm-hmm. all on the West End, we haven't had any passenger trains for a good 15, 18 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Until just recently.
Until
after
recently.
You
but that's not on the West End.
No.
Like those things.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they got it messed up. It should run from Springfield, from Decatur to Springfield, where it should run.
Mm-hmm.
You see, in that way, they can meet both trains over there going both ways.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And they could haul people from Decatur that works for the state over to Springfield and then bring them back that night.
Let's talk. We mentioned briefly the change, the change from Wabash to Norfolk and Western. But what other changes took place during the time you were working? You mentioned the hours.
Yeah, at steam engines to diesel was the biggest change mm-hmm. I went through.
When did that happen?
Oh, when, Mom?
Approximately.
About 1950.
50?
Oh, I'd say about 1950.
Gee, I don't even know. That's a crying shame. I forget.
But it made your job easier.
Well, I wouldn't say it made the job any easier. Cleaner,
uh-huh.
and naturally haul more. It made it easier in the respect of for the engineer and fireman. I'll put mm-hmm. it that way. But then you have bigger trains,
mm-hmm.
of course, you know. And
because the diesel gives more power.
Only because. Now get this. Let's get it straight. Well, we had steam engines, one crew to an engine. Diesel, 6, 7, 8 units, one crew.
Oh, so it's
that's where your
a
power
harder
comes
job.
In. Uh-huh. That's where your power comes in, that's right.
So they figure they can save money by having...
Man labor. Uh-huh. Just like every place else, you know. You mm-hmm. do away with the man, you do away with the labor and man. That's
mm-hmm.
all.
But...
Whole progress?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, just like Reagan's doing now, he wants to bust up the railroad retirement. That's true.
Well, now I can see that Mrs. Layton doesn't want us to get into politics. So.
She knows. She knows I don't like what they're doing to us.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that's important. What do you think?
My pension. I think Reagan's messing around with our pension. We paid for it. It's our money. We paid into it. He never paid a dime in our pension. Reagan has never paid a dime.
Are they trying to cut down on your pension?
They're trying to do away with it, period.
And
put it in Social Security,
I
don't know anything about Social Security.
Now, railroad people have been on a special pension instead of Social
That's
Security.
That's right. And we
well, did you pay more in than you would
Absolutely.
Have? And therefore, I can see. Well, right. Wouldn't it be possible to have the people who paid in get back and let the newer people go on Social Security? How about that?
Why does the railroad man have to go on Social Security? We've always paid it. It's always mm-hmm. been this way.
It's been a private pension fund.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. And we paid for everything the same way with our hospital. We pay for our own hospital.
So I can see your point.
That's
that,
right. We paid for the railroad man has paid his own dues ever since it's been a railroad.
Mm-hmm.
They paid their own dues. I don't see why the government's got to step in on that.
Uh-huh. Well, let's hope that you can figure it out and work it out.
No, I'm too old to figure it out now.
Well, I wonder, how is railroading different from other occupations?
Well, it gets in your blood, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's exciting? Or
Every trip, although it's the same line, it's a different, mm-hmm. every day is different. Every mm-hmm. trip, to me, was exciting. And mm-hmm.
You
sure.
Mentioned something about emergencies that might occur. Were you ever involved in any real emergencies, accidents, and so on?
Well, you mean hitting cars and stuff?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I think every guy that worked over 2 years has been in wrecks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, cars, people, kids playing chicken, pulling up on the track, and waiting for the train to go on emergency, and they pull off, and sometimes they make it, sometimes they don't.
And
people want to commit suicide.
Uh-huh.
And
so you have had some bad experiences way?
Uh-huh. Really bad.
Did you ever have any times that you felt turned out something pleasant about it?
You mean about a wreck?
Well, no, about not about a wreck, but about railroading.
I mean, love railroading.
Because
I love railroading.
You get to meet people.
Oh yeah, I knew just about everybody from here to Hannibal, Missouri, and all mm-hmm. these small towns. And naturally, we know all each other. I mean, we know all
yes,
the railroads.
Right.
And then I know all the guys that run the elevator and elevators, and I knew all the guys that worked at the elevators. I knew all the section men, and I knew all the officials.
So it was a pleasant way to get along with people, meet people, and
oh,
so.
Yeah. Well, I make people like me.
Well, I can believe that, I'm sure. And that's a great asset in the conductor.
Oh, yeah.
Especially as anyone who meets the public.
Oh, yeah.
Are there any other ways? And we mentioned the hours and the special emergencies or the assets and the problems. Any other ways that railroading is different? It certainly isn't to an office, is it?
No, experience on the railroad is, you know, they try to tell you the book of rules and the safety book and all that, but it's got to be done on the job. Mm-hmm. You can't sit here in Decatur and try to tell a guy over there in New Berlin that he's breaking a rule. I mean, you know, that don't work.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of the way it's turning, I guess. Huh?
So you have to deal with the situations as they arise.
That's right. The safest way,
mm-hmm.
and not by the book.
Mm-hmm. in 1979, your son Jim was working on the railroad. Is he still?
Is.
He still is.
Engineer.
What does he do?
He's an engineer.
So now, did you persuade him to do that,
No, he
did it on his own.
Before he could walk, I had him on an engine,
mm-hmm.
and we used to live at Springfield.
So it was in his blood too.
That's the only job he ever wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care anything about it. His mother, when he learned how to drive a car, he'd take his mother out to Nyanic or Harristown and wait on us guys to come by.
Because
we come by about the same time every other night, we, you know, come home.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd wait out there and wait for us to come by. And that was his
idea of fun.
Yeah, his fun. Uh-huh. And he went right from high school to railroad.
And what's he doing now?
He's an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Frankfort, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
He runs from Decatur to Frankfort.
Mm-hmm.
Or from Decatur to Peru, or from Decatur to St. Louis.
How often does he do that? Every day?
Well, he's a regular every job every time.
Day.
Just about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And he has a little boy, doesn't he?
He has two little boys and a little girl.
Oh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they're all going to be railroaders.
I imagine my
granddaughter be a railroader.
Well, what about women?
I wouldn't doubt. Uh-huh. I wouldn't doubt in time. Hey, like I say this because I might get... They might get balled out or something, but I expect a lot of girls to be engineers and
mm-hmm.
brakemen, conductors. I don't imagine they'll work on the track. I don't think a woman
because
is strong. Because we got all machinery now. We used to pick a rail up by hand. Mm-hmm. Now they got machinery to do it, you see.
Do they have longer rails now, don't they?
Yeah, they're something like 865, mm-hmm. 870 feet long.
But it's all mechanized.
Oh, yeah, everything's mm-hmm. mechanized. See, we used to... when I worked on a section, we used to do everything by hand. We used to take the tie out and put it back ourselves. The tie weighed anywhere 254, 260 pounds. And we used to do that by ourselves. And, but now they got all machines doing that. You know, they got the tie in three pieces. Another machine takes them out and puts them back. Oh, it's all machines, you know.
Well, what do you think is the future of railroading?
I think they'll end up...
That's right. Let him have his chance.
I think that we'll end up in time that we'll have five railroads all over the United States. Maybe six or mm-hmm. seven, but I imagine it'd be about five. That'd be all your branch lines would be gone, and just have main lines.
Now, will these be freight or passenger or both?
Well, I imagine we'll always have passenger trains. They're always going to operate in a red because, you know, they charge so much or toilet papers and napkins and drinking cups and all that. But I'm adding there'll always be, I mean, you know, I think there'll always be an Amtrak.
But it won't have as prominent a part as it used to in the past.
Well, you know, who knows?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, who knows? See, everybody don't like to fly.
No.
And everybody don't like to drive a car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cheaper to go and buy a train unless, you know, of course, the price keeps going up naturally, just like anything else. I think they'll always have it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the railroads company, I don't think, wants passenger trains. I think they want strictly freight.
Because a passenger train causes more headaches.
Well, you know, you got to clear, freight trains, and you know, and of course, the passenger train's a first-class train, so mm-hmm. it got rights over anything else. You see.
One problem seemed from just the general public point of view seems to be that the road beds aren't up to the other service. Is that true?
Well, now the NW, we got the best road bed in we ever had. Mm-hmm. I mean, we got a 60-mile-an-hour track, which is mm-hmm. very real good, and I imagine it'd be an 80-mile-an-hour train or track per passenger, you mm-hmm. know, so that's real good. We got 115, 132-pound rail all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And
but that isn't true all over the country.
Well, I don't.
You don't know about
that. I don't know.
Didn't
of course your branch lines out here. Yeah. I know they let them go. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Did I hear that there's been another merger with the N&W?
Oh, Southern.
Southern.
It was in the paper.
Yes.
Yeah, a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we don't.
So carries out your idea that there will be fewer, that there will be more mergers and fewer lines.
Oh yeah. Sure, they're coming every day. Well, they got to, you know, your airplanes, your barges, and your trucks. You know, railroad's got a big responsibility. They pay a lot of tax,
mm-hmm.
see, where these other outfits don't.
Well, now, do you think that railroads are getting their fair share of
freight?
Grants? No, you know, for example, we wonder if, the highways get some of federal money. Do railroads?
I don't think they get their fair share. I think the railroads got to pay too much tax. They own the ground, they own the switches, they own the ties, they own the rail, and they own all the equipment,
mm-hmm.
you see. Where other outfits, the government steps in and they donate $100 million for an airplane or something, and same way with mm-hmm. boats on the river, and they build all these dams
and
levees
mm-hmm.
and canals and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the railroads, they got to have one built. They got to
bring money. Some people might say the railroads got their share early.
They had to buy the ground, or you see the railroad ground is not very big. You see, mm-hmm. what's your width of your track? 7 feet,
mm-hmm.
7 feet 8 inches, mm-hmm. something like that. So you see, that's not a big span for a railroad.
And of course, in the past, the railroads did open up the country.
If it wasn't for the railroads, we'd still be horse and buggy. There'd been a lot of people who wouldn't taste soda pop if it wasn't for the railroad. Everything went by rail. That's why all the branch lines.
I can see that railroading is still in your blood.
Oh, you betcha. I watch it like a hawk, but I've never been back but once.
Oh, is that right? You too nostalgic or?
No, I just had no desire to go back.
But you do have other pleasures during your retirement. You said golf.
Yeah, playing with my grandkids, traveling,
uh-huh.
taking care of my wife.
I believe you said
cutting the grass.
Yes. Uh-huh. So you are enjoying your retirement.
Love every minute of it.
I believe you said you had motor vans.
Oh, yeah, two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And so you traveled.
Traveled all over the United States, part of Canada, and uh-huh. Bahamas, and we've been all over.
Well, great.
And we're still going.
And I'll overlook the fact that you didn't go entirely by train.
I have been on a train. I have been on a train, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But we're going to take a trip. We're going to take a couple of grandkids and uh-huh. take a little trip. I got a pass, but I don't know if it's mm-hmm. any good or not. You know, Amtrak.
And your health seems okay now.
Yeah, I had a little heart surgery. I had an aneurysm and.
But you seem to have recovered extremely well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, real good.
Well, good. And having other plans then for travel and other...
Well, yeah, we're getting ready. I know we're going to World's Fair.
Well, great.
I don't know where else
and,
we're going.
And you'll take your van?
I haven't got no van.
We sold everything.
Uh-huh. Even sold our boat and all.
Well, I hope you have a place to stay down there.
Well, she's got a sister lives there.
Well, great. So you're...
In Kentucky.
So that's
not very far from there.
Well, we talked about the future of railroading. What about the future of Decatur? Do you think Decatur is going to have a rosy future? Or what about your grandchildren? Are you apprehensive about their lives, or how do you feel?
Oh, no. We live a beautiful life, and I think that as we go, we take everything in stride. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know. And I think Decatur is falling back. I think that they're letting the power companies run Decatur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the power companies just gone too high. And then, you know, everything, the water's gone up, and the people, they just can't hardly make it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many people laid off here. Mm-hmm. But yet, everybody wants to keep raising the price and stuff. You never hear of any tax being cut. It's always added on. Mm-hmm. So that hurts the man.
But you think your grandchildren are still going to come out all right?
Oh, definitely. No doubt about it.
Uh-huh.
I'll see to it. Uh-huh. Yeah, we'll see to it that they come out all right. No, no. You know, the younger generation, they don't pay no attention to this. Where it bothers me, but don't bother them.
Mm-hmm.
You see, everything raising bothers me, but it never bothers my son.
Because they haven't seen any other times.
No, they think it's all right, you know.
Uh-huh.
Which I was taught, you know, a little different. They were,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, they're learning a few lessons now, though, aren't they?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. just like my daughter said yesterday, wasn't it? She says, oh, she says, gasoline's only $1 a nickel. She says, I don't mind paying that.
Uh-huh.
You know, but then she says, well, I've been brainwashed for $1 a nickel, you see.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, at least you think that your children will have as good a life as you and will.
Oh, I hope they do. Oh, I'm sure they will. I'm sure. This is still America. I mean, you know, they want us to talk about other countries, but we still live in America.
And a great place to live.
Yeah, the only place. I wish them guys that want to be over there in Europe would take off and go over there. You know, all the time, every time a politician gets on the radio about gasoline being $2.75 a gallon over here in Europe or something like that, that's where he ought to go. If he wants to bring Europe over here, let him go back over there. We don't need him. We don't need them guys.
Uh-huh.
This is America, and that's what we fought for.
Well, that's very good. Well, I certainly have enjoyed talking to you and to Mrs. Layton. It's been a real pleasure, and it's really great to talk to someone who seems to have had such a good life and who is so happy and optimistic about the future, and I thank you very much.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to know really quick?
Well, I think that we've covered pretty much the range, don't you? Unless you have something you want
no,
to
No, I haven't got a thing.
Okay. You have been listening to the reminiscences of Bill Layton, that is W.T. Layton, who has been telling us the years he spent working on the railroad. This is Betty Trunell for the Decatur Public Library.
America, and that's what we fought for.
Well, that's very good. Well, I certainly have enjoyed talking to you and to Mrs. Layton. It's been a real pleasure, and it's really great to talk to someone who seems to have had such a good life and who is so happy and optimistic about the future, and I thank you very much.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to know really quick?
Well, I think that we've covered pretty much the range, don't you? Unless you have something you want
no,
to
No, I haven't got a thing.
Okay. You have been listening to the reminiscences of Bill Layton, that is W.T. Layton, who has been telling us the years he spent working on the railroad. This is Betty Trunell for the Decatur Public Library. Public Library. This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Our guest today is Mr. Lee Piggott. Mr. Piggott was one of our early guests in this series, and now we've invited him to return to tell us more of his reminiscences. Mr. Piggott?
I'm anxious to talk more about my religious part of my life, which I failed to say anything about before. I joined the Epworth League at the Methodist Church when I was about 15 years of age in Murfreesboro, Illinois. And it was a good group. And we were assigned a new minister about that time by the name of Dr. Cameron Harmon. At the time, I was president of the group. And Dr. Harmon and I had conferences from time to time about the activities in the league group. And Dr. Harmon and I got to be quite a close friend. And he said, "Lee, what about going to high school?" Well, I told him why I had to quit school while I was in the seventh grade, and I couldn't go back to high school. And he said, "Why can't you go back?" I said, "Well, I don't want to go back to the eighth grade here." And he said, "Well, I'm president of the board at McHenry College, and I'd see that we could get you in there if you're willing to go there and prepare for the ministry." And I said, "Prepare for the ministry? What do you think I am?" Well, he says, "I believe you'd do very well if you did that." I said, "Well, I could never get education enough for anything like that." But he said, "I'll help you get a job there to pay all of your expenses so your folks won't have to pay anything at all." "Well," I said, "Dr. Harmon, my father wants me to be a machinist on the railroad, and I want to be one too. Well, I'll talk it over with Dad." Well, I told my father that I was thinking about going to McHenry, that Dr. Harmon would help me, and that maybe I would think something about the ministry. He said, "Oh, no, Lee, that I had started my apprenticeship for the railroad machinist, and if I quit the job and went to school, one thing was certain, never come back and darken my door." Well, I said, "Dad, if that's the case, I guess I'm as bullheaded as you are. I'm going to go to McHenry." I went to McHenry, and Dr. Harmon found me a job to pay a lot of my expenses. And I enjoyed McHenry, the athletics. I had a job ringing the rising bell for the girls' dormitory, for my room, waited tables for my meal, and I was janitor in one of the science buildings for some of my other expenses. Well, it wasn't but a year or so, a couple of years, that Dr. Harmon was appointed president of Missouri Wesleyan College in Cameron, Missouri. Well, he asked me to go with him, and he would see that I'd have a chance to earn my way if I went there. Well, I thought if I got contact out, if I did not keep contact with Dr. Harmon, I didn't see how I could get along. So he had the Missouri Conference to appoint me at a church in a small town. Poor old country boy who had done nothing in the way of preaching or anything else. The first appointment he got me was a few miles out of Kansas City. And I was just scared to death the first time that I went to the place. I had promised that I had promised that I should add that Dr. Harmon and I had a conference about what I'd do if I applied myself to the task. I could do it. I took the train to Kansas City and then a train out to this little town, and I don't remember the name of the town. I got off the train at the town and stood there not knowing where to go, not knowing a soul. In a few minutes, a man and his wife came up and said, asked, he said, "Are you Reverend Piggott?" I said, "Reverend Piggott." I said, "No, I'm Lee Piggott." "Oh, yes," I replied. We walked to the church, which took us about 15 or 20 minutes, and then they took me to the parsonage, which was furnished. Next, they gave me to the keys to the house and the church, and we visited the church. And I commented several things on the beauty of the church, but I noticed that the lighting system was rather peculiar. One system was an electric lighting system, and the other one was a gas lighting system. I said, "Do you have trouble with the electric light system or the gas system?" Their answer was, "No, we don't have any trouble." "Well," I said, "I'll take the gas lights out, fixtures out sometime when I can come down early. The gas fixtures spoils the looks of the sanctuary." The two members threw up their hands and almost shouted, "No, no, leave them alone. If they are taken down, half the members will leave the church." And I thought, well, I'll wait my time and I'll see what I can do. Well, anyway, I remember the place the first few times, again for another odd thing. I had my first funeral there. I remember the mourners had a good time at the funeral. Before the funeral tonight, when they stayed up, they were visiting and having a family reunion. They stayed all night, drinking and playing cards and having the time. I do not remember having the funeral services, but I know that I did. The little town had a custom of playing cards along the sidewalks in the town. I spent some of my time on the my weeks and visits there in the town, walking from card game to card game, talking to the men about their work and inviting them to Sunday school and church. Well, I decided to take the gas lights out of the church sanctuary. I thought early one weekend I'd get it there and do it. I had found ladders in the basement of the church, and I had everything ready. To make a long story short, I said nothing about the lights being removed. Nothing was said to me for two or three weeks afterward. But I changed my heart. I was afraid to do it. I didn't take them down. But I'm sure that had I taken them down, it would have been the best thing that happened in the church. But they didn't seem to mind. They loved their gas and they loved their electricity. It seemed like the ones that wanted electric lights would sit in one place and the ones that wanted gas lights to sit in another place. And that was funny. Shortly after I left that place, I went to conference. And I do not remember where that conference was held in Missouri. It was a conference that was where I took the first step towards a minister. My next assignment was closer to Cameron, Missouri. where I could get to easier. It was four little places, and I only remember three of them: Proctorville, Catawba. These churches were closer to Cameron by about 30 miles. I would take the train down to the little town close to the place I was to go on Sunday. Some members of the church that I was to attend the next morning came to pick me up each time. Otherwise, I would have to walk to some member's home. The closest was 5 miles. I would speak one of the two churches in the morning, eat dinner with someone visiting, and be taken to the next church in the afternoon. After service at the church, they would to the next train to the next church for that night. And then in the morning they would take me to the train back to school. I served this circuit until I left for the World War II in 1918. I finished the school year and decided to go to summer school in 1918. In the first or second week of the summer school, I was sitting in the back of the classroom, evidently daydreaming, when someone touched me on my shoulder. I looked up, and it was the dean of the summer school. "What's the matter, Piggott?" he said. I answered, "Oh, I don't know." He looked at me and said, "I'll tell you what I'll do. If you want to join the Naval Aviation, go ahead. The boys had all been talking about going to World War I, and he knew well what we wanted to do. For all the summer school work, if you go." I said, "You sure want to get rid of it, don't you?" "You mean that, do you, doctor?" "Yes," he said, "I do." I said, "Okay, I'll try it. Don't worry about that." And so then I went to Kansas City to take my examination and was accepted for the Naval Air Force in January the 1st. No, accepted for the Naval Air Force and stayed in until January the 1st, 1919, when I came to Decatur. My church activities have been varied. In Decatur, I did fill the pulpit of the Cleveland Avenue Baptist Church for a short period. I think it in 1919 and 20. I talked to the pastor, but they said they didn't have records that went back that far. I was elected president of the Decatur Ministerial Association in 1944 and 45. I joined the Baptist Church in 1900, and I'm not sure of that one. I later was baptized because I was originally a Methodist, and I was only sprinkled, and I had to be immersed in order to go to the Baptist Church. I taught the ladies' Sunday school class there for 10 years. I joined the Baptist Church, baptized by immersion, and I joined the Methodist Church about 25 years ago, and I'm still going there. I've touched on most of my activities in religious life. There are many other little things I could name, but in general, those are the main ones.
Mr. Piggott, that's certainly an interesting account of your early life in the church. But of course, we know that you turned to teaching and later school administration. You were principal. How did you happen to change from ministry to education?
Well, I was in James Milliken University, and I did not really ask for any help at Milliken, but the coach said, "Peggy, come and go with me, and I'll get you a scholarship if you want to go to Milliken." I had played basketball against Milliken, and he said, "I'd like to have you play on our team." I said that he would give me a scholarship. He said, "Come on." So we went over to see the president, and he gave me a scholarship at Milliken. And that was on January the 2nd, 1919. And that, he didn't know me at all. Then I got going through the machine shop one day. The boy was trying to put a piece of a pump, it was, on a planer. And I went through, and he and his teacher were trying to get that piece on the bed to plane it off, and they're having trouble. And I stood there and watched him. I said, "Would you mind if I helped you?" Well, I'd had experience on the planer, so I laid it out for them, and they did it. They looked at me, and Prof. Cole came along. That's the man that was in charge of manual training. So he said, "Well, Piggott, why don't you take some manual training?" I said, "I'd love to." So I took some manual training, and Prof. Cole was my staunch defender. My first job there, Cole got it, was to dig a tile ditch around a quarter of a mile track to drain the water out of the tile, out of the track, you see. Well, I took a course under Doc Cole, and I made a table and some other things. And I was much older than most of the boys, and Prof got to liking me. So when I graduated, Prof Cole said, "Piggott, go to the superintendent of school and ask for a job." I said, "They wouldn't take me." No. "You go and see him." I said, "No, I won't, Prof." He said, "Yes, you will." So I said, "Okay." So the day I was to see him, I said, "Well, I'll go up anyway." So I went up there, the superintendent's office, and said, "I wanted an appointment. I had an appointment with the superintendent." The secretary said, "I know you have, Mr. Piggott, but he has an appointment to go to St. Louis on that afternoon train, and the taxi cab is out there now to take him." That was 1920, about 21. And he hadn't time to see you. I said, "Well, you go tell the superintendent that I'm here so he'll know at least I honored my appointment." So she went in, he says, "Stick your head in there and don't go any farther." So I stuck my head in, he says, "I'll send you a contract tomorrow." I didn't get to say anything. That was the way I got my first job. Well, then I got that job. Then it's the summer. In the summer, I was washing walls at Durfee School and dipping our seats.
This was before you started teaching? The summer before you started your job as the teacher?
No, I had my years.
You were doing it during the summer vacation.
No, I had that first summer as the manual training teacher.
Yeah, oh, yes.
Then this was in the summer.
Yes, after
and
that.
That was a job that I had.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I was painting the walls the day that the elementary supervisor came around. And I had classes that came into the school, Durfee School, and it was the roughest part of town, and it was a foreign group mm-hmm. in there. And I just loved those kids and had a good time with them. Mm-hmm. And I could tell you a lot of stories about them. And so I didn't even know she was supervisor. And she says, "Mr. Piggott, will you please come down off of that ladder and come out here? I want to talk to you." I got down off the ladder, and we molted off so they couldn't hear any of the conversation. And this was the middle of August. And she says, after talking a while, "How do you like it out here?" I said, "I like these kids. I have a good time with them." And she says, "Well, you've just been appointed principal of the school for next year." I said, I don't know anything about being a principal. She says, "Well, you're the principal." I said, "How come?" She says, "Well, you're the only man in the system that has a degree that's not in secondary school or has principalship. And you seem to get along out here. So we want to try you as a principal." That's how I got my first principalship. Mm-hmm. As I say, I like those kids, and we just had a good day. Mm-hmm. Well, then I stayed out there until there's a new school built out there, junior high school. They moved me out there. They just moved me there. They didn't ask me about it. Then we had a program out there. We had a year there. I had 2 years there. Then they built that was all in that bad neighborhood. Then they built a junior high school over in the high-class neighborhood. We were having a banquet for these. Are we out here? Are we still talking? Mm-hmm. And we had a banquet for those kids if they made an average of C. Now, that wasn't bad. And they had to make an average of B in deportment. They could all get to the banquet free, you see. Well, the secretary came down when we were just getting ready for that, said, "Mr. Piggott, you're wanted on the telephone." I said, "What for?" He says, "Well, the paper wants to know if you've got a portrait, a glassy print." I said, "No, what do they want?" He says, "You've been appointed principal of this classy over there." Well, then I was over there from 32 to 43. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing happened one time. The same thing. The newspaper called up and asked for a print. And I said, "Why?" "Because you've been appointed principal of the high school."
It seems to me you were always getting jobs you didn't apply for.
That's right.
That's great.
I didn't apply for any of those. Now then, the superintendent called me in one time and said, "Now, Mr. Piggott, I want you to be the superintendent of schools. And don't you worry about what happens up here and what it looks like. I'm recommending you for superintendent." Well, I applied for that job and did not get it.
It's better if you didn't apply. But even though you turned from the ministry to education, the church and your religion was a strong influence in your life.
Well, I think that there's something in guidance there somewhere. I kind of control myself in saying, I believe maybe Maybe it was guided for me to take that route instead of...
Because think of all the young people you influenced.
Oh, yes.
That must be a great satisfaction.
I had a boys' club at that first principalship I had. And up in here was a malleable iron. And it was rough, it was. Well, I asked them about their old office building. Says, well, we're not doing anything with it, Mr. Piggott. Said, maybe we have it for a boys' club. Sure, don't let them tear it up. We had a bunch of boys up there, and some of them would go out there at night. They wouldn't go home as they should. And I had one boy with the name of Henry Fedora. I shouldn't have named him. But Henry would get up there, and his father and mother would call me sometimes and say, Mr. Piggott, will you go and find Henry? He is not home yet. And I'd go out and honk. So one time she called him, I said, well, Miss Fedora, I just can't go to get Henry all the time. Oh, please go get him. Well, I thought he was out up there, so I went up there, not a soul there, so I just honked and honked, and finally three of them came. Henry was one of them. I said, Henry, your folks are just raving. They want you home. Jump in, let's go. So the boys jumped in, took Henry home. I found out what happened. They took Henry home, they gave him a whipping, took all of his clothes off of him, put him in the basement, and they had these little windows, you know, up high. They knew he couldn't get out, and there wasn't any clothes in there for him to put on if he did get out. But he was gone the next morning anyway. And what he had done was he looked out, got up on something that they didn't think he could, looked out, and he saw some of his sister's clothes on the line. So he some way got out, got that window open, got out and got his sister's clothes. But Henry turned out he was the only one of the gang that went to high school.
Oh,
he went to high school.
So he wasn't too bad at heart.
Well, that's all for Jesse.
Well, this has certainly been, it's certainly been interesting to see these influences in your life and how you've influenced other people in Decatur,
well,
too.
I don't want to talk on. I could tell you a lot of other stories.
But that gives us an idea.
What?
That gives us an idea of how your life has gone. Thank you very much, Mr. Piggott. We certainly appreciate your coming back to add to your story. You've been listening to the second recording made by Mr. Lee Piggott for the Decatur Public Library. This is Betty Turnell.